outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Last week I began sharing with you a conversation I had with Stefan Vosloo, a good friend of mine from Ladysmith, South Africa. He was sharing with me some of the last 7-8 years of his journey and some of the things that God has done in his heart and through experiences with him to invite him more deeply into this journey of living in oneness with God's love. And we got a chance to air that last week, and I know from the email I've gotten, from the conversations I've had with a lot of you, this conversation went deep. I apologize for the audio. I know it's not the best, but the conversation has such rich content that I was going to share it with you anyway, and I wasn't going to try and recreate that conversation. So you may have to listen carefully, but I tell you, there's stuff there that's worth it. I know for me, it has completely upended my heart in a lovely way. There's things in here that I see where God's been laying the groundwork for me to take a step into some other realities. And some of it's just like somebody threw a door open and there's a field out there to explore that I never saw coming. And I'm enjoying it. I don't even feel like now. That was a conversation 2 weeks old for me. I am still thinking through and sorting through, and God's stirring the mix of my heart to let me land someplace. We're going to get back to that conversation in just a moment. We have a little bit more of it, and some of it will just freak you out. It did me having the conversation with him, but it's also landed in a wonderful space in my heart. Before we do, however, let me just share a few things with you. This is the last podcast of the year. Next Friday will be Christmas, the next one New Year's, and just a good time to take a hiatus. And I think with all we've had in these last two podcasts, really good to just give you some time to process that and think it through and pray it through and see where God wants to direct your heart rather than just to getting on to the things. And we have some other things to get on to. So Lord willing, we'll be back in the first of the year. As I've said before, I don't know when this ever ends. It may just end at some point, and I don't know. Calendar years are not significant to me, so I'm pretty sure we'll be back in the year ahead. Also, I want to announce, you're about a week away or so, I think, from my new book being available. And I have to say I think because, you know, COVID and production delays and shipping delays, I'm not sure we're going to get this by the first of the year. And it's a devotional. It's a live, love, live free, live full in the coming year. And but it's not like it's in order. So if you get it mid-January, and I hope it's not that late, but if you do, just start in it. And it's not tied to this year specifically or next year. It's not tied to certain dates. It's just 365 reflections to invite our hearts into more relational space as our days are getting going, and more less on our human effort and more on what God's doing in us, how we recognize his whispers in our heart and his fingerprints and our circumstances. And hopefully that's going to be available, and if we're going to get it out just as soon as we get them in hand. I also want to say this. We're looking for people to be part of our launch team. We've got a number of you, 70, 80 of you have said, hey, we want to be part of that. We're told a little more would be good. So if some of you are active in social media and you're kind of excited about this book and you would like to help us make it available through your social media channels, that would be a great blessing to me and maybe to your friends to realize this book's available and out there. So if you want to get in touch with us, please do. There'll be a link on the podcast notes at thegodjourney.com. So you could join us. We'll send you an advanced copy of the book by ebook. We'll also give you $6 off the price of the book. You can buy it for $10. I don't do traditional publishing, and I don't have traditional media opportunities. If you know of some for us, if you've got a podcast you'd like to invite me on, talk about the book some. We're just looking for ways in January to put this book out into the world, let people know it's there, and see how God wants to move it on. So if you'd like to help us, please get in touch with us there, and I'll appreciate it. Now back to my conversation with Stefan. We talked about love. We talked about this gateway of everything Stefan wanted in his life, the being a spiritual guru, traveling, being known, and God leading him to that gate saying, I don't have any of that for you. And invite him down a different path, a path of love, learning to live in the reality of God's affection, how that's changed his relationships with other people, and even changed his relationship with himself. Learning to be one with the brokenness in him and the brokenness around him. Oh. So let's get back to it. And then Kyle is going to join me on the backside. And we don't have much time, but we're just going to share a little bit about how this impacted us and what are the significant things in it for us. And hopefully that will set the stage for you to have some reflection of your own and see what God might be doing in you in learning to live at one with love and learning to live beyond the patterns of selfish thinking and the pain it causes. Here's my friend Stefan.
For me, I've learned that it's an identity problem. You know, it is, if I try to love people as me, as a man, then I can fake it. But I can't do it. But there are always conditions. And it always depends on the level of provocation. When I start losing that feeling of love, you know. But when I really identify with who I really am, and with the new man that Paul calls the new man, you know, when I'm there, then I'm in this fountain of love that I had that experience about, and I'm one with it, and I can love from that experience, and not trying to convince myself that I love. It's something that I discover. It's like a wow. That. Yeah. Okay. Here it is. Here's the love now. You know, and sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it takes weeks or months of just consistently loving whatever arises, whatever comes up. As I see that person come on the TV, or something, there's some people that are really, especially some of the politicians that really get me, you know, can really rile me up. It takes months. And then suddenly, one day, one morning, I'm just sitting there, and I do my practice where I really love this person. I call him forward, and I really say, "I love you, really love you." And the one morning, it happens, and I know it's now done.
Wow!
And the funny thing is from then on, I battle to say bad things about that person. It doesn't matter what he does, you know. Where the day before that, I could still say, "The idiot! Look at him! What he's doing!" And so the next day, I'm struggling to do that. I'm struggling to listen to other people calling that same person those names. And so what I'm saying, it's way beyond me what I'm talking about, and it's an identity thing. It's identifying with who I really am, and that's the fountain. And once that fountain starts flowing in a particular situation, that's great. Now, I must say, there's a lot of situations where the fountain is not flowing. And that's also okay, because I'm on a journey here. I'm walking down a little path. I haven't arrived. So it's okay if I can love this particular politician and that one I can't, or this person at this point in time has rejected me and abandoned me and walked away and so on. I can't love that one, but I can love that one. That's okay, because I'll get there. Sometime or another, I'll get there, but I love that one too.
Yeah, I love the freedom of that. I love the honesty of that. I love being able to say, that love is not yet in my heart for that person. And I'm just going to keep putting it before God, right? But I do have it here. So I think Jesus loved us all when he was here, but a lot of his, there's times when he does something for someone that he talks about being moved with compassion, that those on the forefront of who really strike our hearts at any moment is part of where God is asking us to be involved. Don't condemn yourself because you're not loving well over here. Love what you love. And let that river grow in your heart and mind, and it will continue to grow. I think we get focused on sometimes where we fall short, and I think the whole focus on sin and religious history of Christianity, the whole focus on sin is the opposite of what we're talking about. Because when you're focused on sin, you can't love freely. You can't love yourself. You can't love other people around you, because it's all sin management and trying to get everything to be better. And so even we focus on where we're unloving, is the wrong focus. Focus where love is in your heart and keep the other, hold it before God, but don't lose yourself in where it's not working or real yet. Lose yourself where it is real.
And that's very, very closely connected to identity, because if I don't say to myself, I can't do this, but I can actually, because that part of me that that abides in Christ, that part of me that is one with Jesus and he's abiding in me, that part loves everything unconditionally, even my own ambitions and my own desire for recognition. He loves that unconditionally as well. So, okay, so I can also love that unconditionally because that is who I am really one.
I wonder if you have any more comment on this paragraph, which I loved, to what you wrote me. I think our minds are slowly waking up to the thinking of Jesus. And as we let go of everything else and embrace the kind of sacrificial, other-centered love that lets us leave positions and privileges and entitlements and become one with brokenness in and around us, we find that there is a new way of thinking that is saving us from the pain contained in self-centered thinking. And then you ask this question, maybe this is heaven, being free, which Paul talks, or Peter writes, in, as Eugene Peterson translated it, you know, free from the tyranny of getting our own way.
Tyranny, yes.
And I see that same thing reflected here. And yet, you know, in the discussion we're having freshly in America about race and about racial injustice, and you come from South Africa, so you guys have your own history with that. But when you talk about leaving positions and privileges and entitlements, I don't think most people see that as a desirable road. It's to hold on to whatever privilege, position, entitlement you have. This is a big ask. I know some of my own friends with the new book we have out on the language of healing and caring about other people that have been on the other side of the justice issues from maybe where I grew up and people who look like me. And so many of my white friends can't even have the discussion. It's so threatening to them. And I guess it goes back to that identity again. If you don't know who you are in Christ, you can't contemplate what your privileges and entitlements are and how it is that you would find commonality with the broken. You just don't want to. The ego is so fragile, I guess, that if we only have a little bit to hold on to, we hold on to it with a death grip.
Yeah.
And I love this, the whole we're set free, saving us from the pain contained in a self-centered thinking. Oh my gosh, I to see it as painful is awesome because most people don't. That's their protection. It's not their pain. They think it's their protection, but it does create incredible pain in their life that they never see.
I think the movement out of the prison of self and a movement into his heart is basically a movement away from self-centeredness and entitlement and pride into a place of humility and other-centeredness. And sacrificial love. So when I talk about love, because love is such a badly defined word for all of us these days, I'd rather talking about total, sacrificial, unconditional other-centeredness. Because that's what I see in the Trinity. That's what I see the picture. That's the picture of Jesus. And for me, it's amazing that Jesus was also on a journey. I mean, the writer of the Hebrews says, he had to learn obedience through the things that he suffered. So he had to learn something in his journey. And for me, when he cleared the temple and made a whip and hit people with a whip and turned over their tables and caused chaos and caused them to lose, I personally think that was where he was on his journey. And on his journey at that time, he wanted to take control for his father's sake. He was doing something for God. Hmm. And that I don't want to put anything into the mind of Jesus, but it helps me to see that he did that. If you do it publicly today, you'll probably end up in court. If we understand the journey that Jesus was on, you know, he didn't stand in the door of that temple and said, "Father, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing," because he wasn't there. You know, but when he hung on the cross, he found that place, and that place went through Gethsemane. Blood, sweat, and betrayal by all his loved ones, dark night of the souls, St. John of the Cross called, and he was hanging there, and those same people, he was saying, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing." The same guy who made the whip and chased. And for me, that brought a tremendous sense of it's okay to be on a journey. If my master and teacher was on this journey, and I look at him, and he ended up on that place. He did end up, and I can end up there too. And when I miss it, when I lose my cool, I can actually walk out of there where I've lost my cool and just know it's okay. It's part of my journey. It's all right. And I'm on my way there. I'll lose my cool again tomorrow, or I'll do a stupid thing again tomorrow. But I will end up in a place where I can, with all my heart, say, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. They don't understand. It's not like they don't know what they're doing. It's just like, you know, they don't understand. The person who has just betrayed me or has just walked out on our friendship after 25 years, you know, he walked out on me because of various reasons. But it's just he does not understand what unconditional, other-centeredness actually means and what the kind of sacrifices you've got to bring to get there. Hmm. And so now I can say that. But 5 years ago, I couldn't say that because the ego was just prohibiting it. There was no way I could, because I was in the scene, all about me. And he's just left me. He's just betrayed me. And I was, yeah, you know, and this process of just moving out of that central place where it's not me in the center anymore, but he's in the center. And I can absorb what's happening. I can actually transform the pain and transform it into love. That's really what I think is happening. Wow. Sometimes it's not happening all.
So you're thinking Jesus lost his cool in the temple and kept his cool on the cross?
Probably sounds like blasphemy.
No, I'm just wondering how you process that. We know Jesus was without sin. So I'm asking the question, I think, when we talk about, you know, language of healing and loving people, and then people always, the ones that, you know, sometimes Jesus, you got a whip in your hand, you got to beat the truth, you got to beat the truth into somebody. That's the only example people kind of go to about Jesus not always being loving. Now, I look at it differently, because I think whatever Jesus did in the temple, it endeared the children to him, because one of the Gospels says after that, the children came to him. So I don't think it was this ravings of a madman throwing whip around. It may have been done somewhat humorously, but making the point. But what I hear you saying, and I love it if this is true, you know, that at that point, Jesus is still learning the depths of love. And so at that point, he loves his father, hates seeing the temple misused. It's not sin that he does something, but he does something out of protecting his father instead of loving them in a way they could be loved. I don't know. I don't know what you're saying. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Wow. You know,
and in that, I don't think he sinned, because for me, sin is when you are moving away from working with your father. You know, when you are breaking that bond, when you are destroying the unity with him. And I think within the context of being one with his father, Jesus did some things that could have ended him up in jail if you do it today. Because if today I go into a temple and I turn things over and hit people with a whip, I will end up in jail.
Yeah.
And people will say that's wrong. But because it was Jesus, and we say that he did not sin, and I really believe he didn't sin, I'm not disputing that at all.
Right.
I'm just saying that I have done some unloving things in the name of my father that wasn't sin. I started a church, and it was pretty unloving from the way I'm looking at it now.
Right.
It was pretty much politics and doing it for myself. But it was still in the name of my father. And he was okay with that. Because I didn't sin in that. I just didn't know what I was doing. And he could say to the father, forgive him, for he just doesn't understand. And that's why he's gone into this situation.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Anything else on your heart?
Yeah, I think Philippians 2 has been a major thing in my life. We were in intercession. We had an intercessory meeting for 22 years, every Thursday morning at 5 o'clock, we rocked up and we were praying. And it was amazing how it started and what we thought we were going to get out of it. You know, I mean, you know, these kind of commitments, and eventually you'll get a revival. Because those people prayed for so long, and then they got a revival. So we'll do the same, and we'll get a revival. And anyway, so 3 years ago, as we were praying about some other things, you know, suddenly the Lord says to me, Philippians 2. And I know it by heart. So I said, but I know this. And I actually recited it. I was actually lost in the meeting for a while there. And as I'm reciting it, suddenly this verse came up saying, work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. For it's God who works in you to will and to work for his good pleasure. And I realized, but what is going on here? Anyway, and he said to me, remember this day, for it's going to change your life. But it's going to be a hard road. You're going to have to come back to this day. And after that, I started to really investigate this Philippians 2 phenomenon. And it's exactly this thing that we're talking about. Jesus, knowing who he was, being entitled to be God, gave up his entitlement and his position and became one with brokenness. He pitched his tent in the brokenness. And being one with brokenness, he took it further. And he became obedient unto death. Now, for me, that says this pathway that Jesus walked. This journey that he was on. But it started with him letting go of his entitlement and who he was by rights could have claimed to be, and becoming something else that was in the midst of the brokenness and taking on that same form and that same way. And for me, the incident in the temple and calling people names was all part of that. Because he had to show that he was really completely human. And that made a big difference to my life. And so Paul says, you know, do this working out in fear and trembling. It's an important part of your Christian walk. It's not that you're going to get saved by it, and whatever you want to call salvation. But you're going to get saved from self-centeredness and pride and entitlement if you're willing to let go of these things. Follow this pathway and become then eventually become obedient unto death. Because you can't just hold on to entitlement and become obedient unto death. It's just there's just too much space. We have to walk this pathway.
Yeah.
And I think that has made a big difference in my approach.
That's awesome. I love that.
Everything is an incarnation to me of love that is not seen and that cannot be seen unless we do something.
Yep.
You know. And so when we come together like that, I think it will also be a lot for us, for the 10 or 12 of us who come together, go on to a journey together and see what God wants to do in us. Because if there's one thing that we've learned, and we've learned it the very hard way, because we nearly died in October 2018, and you've been in places like that. But in that place, you know, you were worried, you were going, okay, now, you know, what's going to happen about this? What's in that? And in that morning, I had an experience where I saw this door, and Jesus said, come in, but you must leave everything outside. And I left everything outside the doors, you know, and I walked into this room, and this room was totally dark, and there was no furniture in it. And these things that I left outside kept on wanting to come in, into my thought process again. But what I realized while I'm sitting there, I realized that I left the people and the things that I was concerned about outside because God had to change my heart. Not my circumstance. He had to change my heart. And then sitting there. So later that day, Lynn and I were sitting on our deck, and we were really both very, very sick. And two specialists said to both of us, you know, you've got a life-threatening problem here. You know, do you realize that? And we were sitting there, and I said to her, listen, this is what happened to me this morning. Let's do this. Let's say to God now, we're going to leave the family, our health, the pain, all these things. We're going to leave it outside and just go in and sit down so that we can change our hearts. And to me, that was the most powerful act of spiritual warfare I've ever done in my life. And God did something in our hearts. We learned what he wanted us to learn. I would say our most powerful act of warfare would be to let him change our hearts and find in our hearts the love for the people, because there is no way that the enemy can fight that. He can fight all our efforts, all our prayers and all our things, but he cannot come against love, because love is this thing that totally disarms him. Totally. Father, they don't know what they're doing. Forgive them. You know, they don't understand. So when we change, I think we will get to that place that you spoke about.
I appreciate your time, my friend.
That was a pleasure. I really enjoyed seeing you again.
There's so much here. I mean, we could probably spend 3 hours.
Content is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. And thanks for having me back again, Wayne. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a while. I've had some other things going on out of nowhere. So what are you thinking, Kyle? What sticks out in your heart from not only this week, but also last week's, this whole interchange with Stefan?
So one of the big things for me that really initially stood out was the pools of love conversation that he brought up, and just that experience of being drawn to the pool of love and how his experience of it just grew. And I loved the dialogue that he and Jesus had in regards to, Lord, I'm not going to share this with anybody else. I want this to be intimate. I want it to be between you and I. And I think if I remember correctly, he said, I don't want to have to explain it or justify it or try to share it with other people. I don't want to bind up what you want to do, Lord. And so I'm not going to share this with anybody. I'm just going to go with it. Man, it took me back to a season, a very similar season of my life that I haven't reflected on in a while. And yet I could deeply resonate with being drawn into these experiences with the heart of God that even to this day, I don't know if I could explain or share or even put into words, because they were so beautiful and so powerful. And yet, and then, oh man, yeah, those were the two that initially stuck out to me that I really resonated with. And then when he talks about learning to love the old man and just his perspective on that, just taking it in, recognizing it, identifying that the old man is there, but expressing unconditional love towards the old man. I'd never heard that before. That laid me out. Like, geez.
I've never heard that either. And other people who I've talked to about it go, oh yeah, I've heard that. And I'm like, really? I've missed this. I love how he ended right there on that whole, maybe love is the key to prayer. You know, prayer, you know, it's always mm-hmm. been, first of all, there's that whole personal comfort angle. We pray so God will do something so I don't have to hurt. And then there's that season we go through where you got to pray in the right words. And so we're so focused on what we're saying to God that, because that will, if we get it right, something will happen. But just getting to that place where my heart's not trying to save anything from me. And my heart's just, whoever I'm praying for, whoever I'm praying about, they're my love for them. This love where he talks about getting this place of just, even with your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
I think we started this little shorter bit that we played this week. We started with that love as a discovery. It's not something we manufacture in our soul. You discover that you have it for this situation, that person. And you don't condemn yourself where you don't have it yet, because that's just part of growing in this arena of love. And I love the piece of, so much of this second bit is about the progress of it. Even thinking, I mean, he blew me away with Jesus losing his cool in the temple, man. I've got Jesus so perfect because he, you know, didn't sin, which we all agree with. But we forget that he grew in his understanding of obedience. And it was through the things that he suffered. So even up to Gethsemane and the cross, he's still learning obedience, which to Stefan and to me both is, you're learning love. You're learning about love, because that's where the only effective obedience flows from. So even if he's in the temple, loses his cool a bit because he's protecting his father rather than loving the Pharisees. And just think about this, But it is true that in the temple, it's taking a whip and, you know, checking it twice, going to find out who's naughty and nice. And at the cross, it's here are these guys who have lied about him. I've been in a court with a liar. It's no fun. You know, you lied about him. You've now got him convicted. You're now killing him. And now you're after all that, you're sitting around the cross mocking him. You know, oh, get your father if you think it's a big deal. Let your father get you out of this. And Jesus say, you know, I can call 10,000 angels. I can blow you right off the planet. I can end this whole process. But he's now at the place of being able to say, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And I know since my conversation with Stefan, two things I'm really working at. Number one is I love you because. And just that little exercise of until I can, just coming to a because. And I mean for the people that are difficult to love. To say, I love you because, and what's really being challenged is loving my old nature, loving that. I just, what you're talking about, it's such a crazy way to think. I love you because you led me to spaces, even through broken pathways, but place that opened my heart. I love you because, blah, blah, blah. And I'll be so glad we're in that place of not needing to raise your ugly head because you want something. You know, you don't know that you're loved enough to be free and to be quiet. And the whole reality, I tell you, it has changed the way I look at my own life. I got an email from a friend back in Ohio. He just said that that whole thing right there, it's the old man still left in me. He said, I've been fighting it all my life. I've never loved it. I've never wanted to. I never knew I could.
Yeah.
Because it's such the bad part of you. You must resist. You must, instead of
resist, no, reject, fight against it.
I can love you knowing you've messed up my life. And if I can't do that to myself, I'm not going to be able to do that for other people. So this has blown me away. I'm just playing with this right now, my own journey. I've never heard of this. Like you said, I'm just like, I want to find out what this is. But I do know that it's changed my heart about a lot of things. And I don't know, you know, it's, I think even trying to fight the old man gives it power. And we're just going to love it and recognize what it is, and not the love that affirms it. It's the love that recognizes it's a damaged part of my heart. But I can love that too. God did. God did when I was there. Why can't I now? And that has blown me away.
And I love when he said that, when he made the comment about how it raises its head, but it's lost its edge for him. Yeah. Yeah, it shows up, and it shows up on a fairly regular basis still. But because he looks on it with love and this, I look forward to the time when, you know, when even my broken self knows the love that I am learning to live in, to where it doesn't need to shout anymore. Like that, I just sat there and I was like, wait, what? Like, whoa, hold on. I gotta rewind that. Like, what?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. I love that whole ending. This journey gets to a place where it really is all about love, and it's not about performance at all. It's not about sin consciousness. It's about just learning how God's love gets to be discovered in my heart. And it's not even like, I'm going to go learn about love and I'm going to figure this out. It's not that. It's I'm going to discover it. And when I discover it, I'm going to give my heart to it and I'm going to live in it. And man, going from whipping people in a temple and doing it for God. I mean, how much of the stuff that we've done is for God? We're worried about God being defended. And God's saying, I want you to the point where you don't have to defend me. You just live in love in the world. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it takes the blame out of a lot of things. I think I've negotiated a lot of my life by blaming people, blaming situations, where I get into something with somebody, then I'm going to go down and figure every place they're wrong so that I know that I'm right. And so that I can, and sometimes actually I am right. And actually they are wrong, but it doesn't help anything to be able to say, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do, which isn't to say the Pharisees didn't know that they lied about Jesus. They didn't know they were killing an innocent victim. They didn't know they were mocking him. What Stefan said in part of that second part of the thing was they don't know love enough to not live out of their insecurities, not to live to their authentic self. So they're caught up because they don't know what they're doing. Because, and man, when you take blame out of a relationship with somebody and the need to justify yourself, And I've only been playing with this a couple of weeks since I talked to Stefan, and I'm telling you what, it has made some inroads in my heart that I want to explore for the next few years. I just feel like I'm on the cusp of something that could be very transformative in my own journey. And I love that.
Man, I have to agree, Wayne. This conversation that you and Stefan had, I would say I'm in a similar place. God is doing something in my heart right now, and I don't know where it's going, but man, it feels like it's going to be big. And I have no idea what that means, but for me, there's been this conversation of there's been a piece of me, a part of my identity, a part of who I am that I have resented since I was a little kid. That I have fought against and I have battled against, and largely because the people around me were telling me it's not good. So for me, I've always been this person that loves life experience, that has always had lots of different hobbies, that, you know, has been all over the place. Even from a very young age, I remember being told in the church, and I remember specifically my dad being like, you need to find your passion, you need to set in on it, and you need to figure it out. And once you figure out exactly what your passion is, like that thing that God set you out to do, then you need to go to get your training in it, and you need to go become a master in it. And man, God is just rock. Like, he is discrediting those messages that have been so deeply rooted for so long. And yet for me, I have warred against that part of my heart for so long because I didn't think it was right. I felt like there was something in that. And so as I was listening to Stefan talking about that, like, it just fell right in line with several conversations that I've had, even just this week, with friends and community that have just shown a light on, man, Kyle, there's this part of you that you've not been treating kindly, that you have been rejecting and that you've been trying to shove down, that you've been warring against. And yet there's part of it that wasn't surrendered to me, but there's part of it that has God's signature all over it. And it's beautiful. Like, it's awesome. And yet, like, I'm still working through it. This is just really raw and very fresh because it's been something that I've been wrestling through for the last week. But one conversation after another. And then I listened to this podcast and he's talking about the pools of love and going into this conversation, like this deep fun, like this relationship of intimacy with God in the unknown and the quiet. I haven't even gotten the chance to get into you about the whole conversation about needing to be seen. And you and him talking about that in regards to ministry, because I deeply resonated with that as well. I mean, it's just been good. Like, I love that right now my mind is just being blown away by what the Spirit is up to. I love it.
Yeah, it might be fun to come back at the first podcast of the year, and since we're not going to do any more this year, and kind of talk about some of how this has grown on in our hearts. Because that whole recognition, a lot of people have written me. I got a lot of email here that we haven't even had time to get to because it's a little bit so brief, but No real pressing questions, which I thought was interesting, but just a lot of affirmation and people saying, oh my gosh, yes. But a big part of that is the recognition, not necessarily the recognition of being on the stage for ministry. For some people, it's just whenever I do a good deed, I want to be recognized for it. Nobody seems to notice. And then that bums me out. And so I've got to try and, you know, the whole need to be seen and how freeing it is not to go through those gates into the fair where all the beautiful people, and when I think of that, I think of like the Emmy Awards or the Academy Awards, you know, all the beautiful people sit around and give gifts to each other. And this is our little elitist celebrity group of people. And there's that in Christendom too. There is.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's double wards and it's all kinds of stuff that look at us. We're amazing people. And then there's this little pathway where, do you want to really learn what love is? And I think what this podcast is hope to encourage people, I think through the whole of it, is that's the better road. It's just hard to find ourselves on that road. Everything in us, for God to say to Stefan, you see in there, that's everything you've ever wanted. I'm not going to give that to you.
Yeah.
And yet Stefan would say, now God has given me a better portion. This has been the real journey that has made my heart glad, that has set me free, that is the real joy. It's not fighting my way into that, because once you fight your way into that, you've got to hold on to that. And I know people who do both, who are fighting their way in or they have it and they've got to hold on to it. I'm really grateful, even though I've wanted that most of my life. I have. I love that God's disarmed a lot of that. And there's a piece in my heart that says, I love the journey God sent me on. I love what is uncovered in my heart. And I know I wouldn't have discovered the things that God wanted me to know if I'd have gone down that road. And I had opportunities to go down that road and just felt like, yeah, there's something about that that I don't want, even though there's a part of it I do. And
yeah.
And it was that old man wanting attention, I guess.
Yeah. And I agree with that. There's that part of me that knows that God has graciously not allowed me to go down that road. But I think just learning how to love that space where it's like, man, God graciously has prevented me from going down there and having my heart completely wrecked. And yet there's still part of me that still wants to go down that road.
Isn't that crazy? And I love it. So the little man pops up, old man, and you go, that's cute. I know you're just not loved enough to let go of that yet. And I talk to myself that way now. And it's pretty cool because it disarms it so quickly to find that true identity, who you really are in him as a beloved son or daughter of a gracious father. And then nothing else has to matter. All those other things we competed for are kind of gone. So it would probably be good. Let's keep this in mind. Maybe we'll start the first of the year and get back to some of this. I know we've got some other hot topics that we wanted to get to, so we'll do those too. But this is worth chewing on for a few weeks, I think.
Yeah.
And exploring for a few months, if not years.
It's a beautiful gift to close down the year and to go into a new year of reflection on.
It really is. So it's a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year all in one shot.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.